Are you someone who uses cannabis as part of your lifestyle? If so, I wonder if this resonates with you. You want to enjoy a mellow unwind with some cannabis, but you can't stand that your high is constantly being tainted by physical discomfort from binge eating. You swear this will finally be the night that you don't eat out of control. But once you have the savory snack, you have to go for sweet, then back to savory, and so it goes until the next thing you know, your stomach feels real funky from a mix of lots of different foods. If you wish that there is a way to enjoy the experience of using cannabis without the unwanted side effects of out-of-control eating, you will not want to miss the Cannabis and Intuitive Eating Workshop. On Thursday, April 18th at 3 p.m. Pacific, I'm hosting a workshop to teach you exactly how to navigate intuitive eating while under the influence of cannabis. Get $15 off when you use code PODCAST at checkout. Head to the link in the show notes to learn more and enroll.
I did Weight Watchers. I went to diet doctors. I tried every method under the sun to be skinnier and skinnier and skinnier.
Welcome to Shoulders Down, a podcast about intuitive eating and living. I'm your host, Leah Kern, and I'm an anti-diet dietitian and certified intuitive eating counselor. In this podcast, you will learn to harness your body's innate wisdom to govern not just how you eat, but also how you live. It is my mission to help you heal your relationship with food and body so you can live your most aligned and fulfilling life. Welcome, and I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome back to Shoulders Down. I laugh every time I'm like, hello, because I feel like I say it with the same inflection every week. But I guess that's just intuitively what feels like the appropriate way to greet you as you start listening to the new episode. So hello, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome back. This week, we have another client feature on the podcast. So a client who graduated from the Embodied Method quite a while ago. She graduated in May 2021. Her name is Erica. She's coming on the podcast today to share her story with you. And this is really cool because it's been quite a few months, as I just said, since she's finished the Embodied Method. So it's sort of like a Where Is She Now episode, right? Like, how is she doing? What's her relationship with food like, even after all these months of finishing the program and flying on her own in her new life as an intuitive eater? So I can't wait for you to hear from her. And a big thank you up front to Erica for her vulnerability and her openness to sharing her story with all of you. It's very inspiring, and I'm just so grateful to have such amazing clients who want to share this work with the world. I think that that's where the power is, right? Like a client who I work with now recently said to me something like, I was asking if, in our first session, I always ask if the client is comfortable with me anonymously sharing wins on social media, my newsletter, etc., just to double check, even though they're shared anonymously. Privacy is so, so, so important to me that I love to check in on that. And she said, yeah. Like, absolutely. I mean, shame thrives in darkness. And so shedding light on other clients' experiences and such is a way to prevent that silence and therefore that shame. So I love that she said that. And I think it applies to today's episode because Erica was so willing to share her story. And I think that really helps people feel less alone and really understand what this could look like really what it could look like to be struggling with your relationship with food, what it could look like to heal your relationship with food, and all the intimate details, I think, really help folks connect to the story and feel less alone. So thank you, Erica. And with that, I also want to give a little trigger warning up front. Erica does share some explicit details of her dieting history, including like specific names of diets and those kind of things. So if that feels like something that might be hard for you to hear right now, maybe it won't be most supportive for you to listen to this episode, and you can join us back next week. So now that you have that background on Erica, we are going to answer a listener question this week. So before I answer the listener question, I just want to give The standard disclaimer that I like to provide: all content in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. The information and education provided is, of course, not intended or implied to supplement or replace professional medical treatment, advice, and or diagnoses. So with that, the question that we're going to look at this week comes from a listener named Kelly. She says, okay, question. If I'm babysitting for a family that is not intuitive eating, parentheses, mom says they have to finish all food on their plate, and also they can't have, quote, too many carbs, I guess I have to respect her rules. That's just so hard for me to have to say that stuff when I know it's not true. I don't know. Any advice? Okay, so amazing question, Kelly. Thank you so much for submitting this. And I've gotten a couple other questions like this in the past, of kind of just like, how do you navigate, specifically in the context of babysitting, how do you navigate when the parents have a different way of talking about food and you don't want to like contradict the parents, but at the same time, you don't want to do harm by contributing diet talk to the children's life. It's hard. This is really hard, that you can recognize that the parent is potentially doing unintentional harm by saying things like, oh, this has too many carbs and the child has to finish their plate, and these things that we know can interfere with a child's ability to listen to their intuition and can also like plant seeds for disordered eating down the road. So we just want to validate that this is very tricky. And I also want to validate that, like, yeah, stepping on the parents' toes and saying like, actually, like, you know, your way of parenting is wrong is also really tricky. And as a babysitter or whatever your role is, maybe a teacher, I imagine it can feel like you don't want to like override the parent and suggest that like you know better than them. So I think that all we can do here is really like tend to the garden that we can touch, right? Like, we can't affect what's going on when we're not there, we're not with the child, but we do have control over the way we speak about food and bodies around the child. So, you know, if you're babysitting and the food is out and the child says something like, mom says I have to be careful, like I don't have too many carbs or something, you could say something as simple as, carbs give your body energy, like carbs help you, you know, like depending on the age of the child, you could say like carb helps, you know, give your brain quick energy and your body quick energy so you can run and play. Something like this, not saying explicitly like, well, mom is wrong, because like obviously that wouldn't be the best way to handle it, but just something to kind of plant another seed in the child's brain of just like, well, actually, like, here's what carbs offer you. You know, carbs aren't the devil. Like, let's frame this in another way. So, you know, this doesn't fix everything. Obviously, it still seems like it will be the case that the parent will be contributing potential seeds for disordered eating when you are not around. But I do think it accomplishes something, which is it helps the child see that there are other ways of thinking about and speaking about and relating to food outside of the parent's way of speaking about food. So all of this to say, you can control the way you speak about food and bodies when you are around the child. And that's actually quite powerful, because, you know, babysitters or, you know, teachers, you end up spending a lot of time with these children. So I think of it like this, like it's better than nothing, you know, at least there will be some glimpses and some openings for this child of seeing food in a different way. For example, seeing what carbs offer the body instead of how carbs are the perceived enemy, or in terms of them saying, mom says that we have to finish our plate. You might say something like, you know, is your belly full right now? And if they say yes, you can say, okay, well, we can, you know, put some of this in the fridge, and maybe if you get hungry later, you can eat it, or something like that. Just even asking, is your belly full right now, is a way for them to drop into their body and start thinking about their own internal cues instead of the external cue of like, you stop eating when your plate is done. It can help them start to see of like, oh, maybe I can check in with my body and see how it feels. Of course, I know this can get tricky, because if the parent continues to say, finish your plate, finish your plate, finish your plate, again, those skills like won't be reinforced outside of the time that you were there. But I think really the theme here is that something is better than nothing, and you have power to affect the way the child is thinking about food when you are around. And then I just want to add here that maybe there is a situation where you have a good relationship with the parent, or you can anticipate the parent being open to hearing about intuitive eating, you know, in a really gentle way. There might be a circumstance where you can bring this up to the parent. And you might even just share with them, like, I used to, you know, struggle with my relationship with food or something like this, if you want to kind of open up the vulnerability. And then I learned about this framework called intuitive eating. It's been like really powerful for me. And there's, you know, certain things about raising an intuitive eater that I've been thinking a lot about since like babysitting your kids or working with your kids or whatever capacity you're connected to their children. And that might be a chance. And the parent might be open to learning, because the truth is they probably just don't realize how saying things like, you know, don't have too many carbs or you have to finish your plate could be harmful. In fact, like, they definitely just want what's best for the child. So they might really appreciate you bringing up how these things could be harmful in a really gentle, delicate, and like constructive, supportive way. A resource I would recommend is, there's a new book actually. So the book is called How to Raise an Intuitive Eater, and it's by Sumner Brooks and Amy Severson. I highly recommend this book. It's by two amazing intuitive eating dietitians, and it's specifically about how to raise an intuitive eater. So whether you're a person who works with children and you want to read this book to learn more about how you could support that child in becoming an intuitive eater, or more like maintaining their inner intuitive eater instead of losing touch with it, or maybe this is something that you end up recommending to the parent as a resource if it turns out that they're open and interested in learning more. So I hope this was helpful for you, Kelly. I know this is difficult, and I think it's awesome that you're even asking these questions and wanting to support the kids who you babysit in such a intentional and meaningful way. So that's incredible. And I want to share with all of you, we have so many amazing questions coming in. So I am actually going to be doing a question and answer podcast episode, solely question answer. So this is your chance. You have access to an intuitive eating dietitian. I will really, really talk through your question at length. And if it's a question that you have that requires coaching, I'll kind of coach you through it hypothetically as I would a client. Of course, this doesn't replace the client coach relationship, but I will give your question that level of care and intention. So I would love to answer any questions you throw my way. The link to submit a question is in the show notes. So please, please submit your questions so we can have a really nice full question answer episode for you. And I can't wait to hear what you have to ask. So now we will get into the episode with Erica. So today I'm so excited. We're here with Erica, who is a graduate of the Embodied Method and a dear friend now. And she is going to share a little bit about herself and her story and really help you see like what this transformation could look like, what it could really look like in a real person's story, to go from living in the restrictive diet mindset all the way through to experiencing food freedom, existing as an intuitive eater, and even some body image shifts she's going to hit on too. So welcome, Erica. I'm so excited to have you here and so excited to give you a platform to like really share all the juicy pieces of your story.
You know, it's so honoring and exciting to be here, Leah. Right before I jumped on this call, I thought, this is actually the first time that I get to just really share about myself. I guess introducing me, I just love people. I am somebody that really just embraces being there and supporting my people that I really love and honor. And there's so many parts to me, but I guess in like a simple nutshell, I am someone that loves to educate and empower people. I am in the middle of an interesting career transition, so I can't tell you what I'm doing. I'm currently fun employed on Camp Erica. So, but things are moving and shaking. And I live in South Florida and I have a cute little dog named Jerry. And I'm just so honored to be here. And I love nature. And I'm just ready to fully dive into my story with Leah.
Oh, thank you for that intro. It's so hard to like boil who you're down to like a convenient little intro, but I feel like those pieces do capture you well. So Erica, I'd love to just give you the floor and let you kind of dive into what was your relationship with food and body like pre doing this work, as much as you're comfortable getting into.
Okay, cool. So a little bit about me. I like to prepare. So I kind of thought about this question and sort of dived it into different seasons and chapters of my life. Because I think that's important for somebody that is looking to see like growth and progress, because nothing is linear in this world. And really for me, if I like do kind of a quick little summary, is the only thing that's constant in this process, at least up until now, this world, and still probably after in some ways, is change. Change in my relationship to my food and body. So just kind of starting, I'm calling this early days. So young little Erica, and really my first memories of food, like there's a picture of me with pudding all over my face and just like loving and enjoying chocolate and pudding. And just really as a child, like I grew up in a Jewish home where just love and food and family was just all intermixed and intertwined. And it was just really a beautiful experience to just learn how to enjoy food when I was young. I really, in early days, got to go to the grocery store and pick out any cereal I wanted. Shout out to Publix. And really just, there was no limits. My parents, of course, cooked meals. We had family dinner time, but I didn't really feel like there were any sort of rules of engagement around food. And really kind of tying that in my body early days, I was a tomboy. I was really active. I really kind of leaned in with the boys. Like I hung out with them. I really liked to enjoy. But there's one element that I think is really important to share that's, you know, deep and personal to me in my story with body. I have a twin sister, shout out to Lauren, who I absolutely love and adore. It's been incredible growing up with a twin, but she has some disability. She has cerebral palsy. And from an early age, being constantly compared developmental milestones, certain aspects of just how I live within my body and my relationship with my body based on the perceptions of my parents, just trying to genuinely see like, oh, you're crawling. Oh, you're walking. Oh, you're doing this activity or this sport. It just immediately put me into a comparison mode at a very early age. So I always just remember really enjoying my body, running, having like really just good connection with my body when I was younger. And then kind of let's move into sort of the middle school time, because that's when things shift. I just thought of the first thing was like booty dance culture, like shout out to people that know booty dance. But I mean, I would practice with my friends in a mirror and we would like, you know, dance to songs and have a lot of fun, just like moving and dancing our bodies and expressing ourselves. And then it immediately kind of became sexualized, right? Like the boys were involved. It was like a whole thing. So that kind of really pivoted my relationship with my body into more of like a, oh, I'm a woman. Oh, like this is what femininity looks like. This is sort of that transition out of really like a, oh, I'm just like a boy, hang with the boys. Like, no, I'm a girl. Like I got my period, like life kind of just started happen. And then in the food department, this is when like 100 calorie packs started, is kind of like how I define this era. And just my relationship to food started to morph and started to change. Like I said, I'm Jewish. So I went to a ton of bar and bat mitzvahs. And there were, I mean, I went to some really extravagant affairs. There was these giant parties with like any type of food you can imagine. And big shout out to my mom. Like I got to share shoes with her for the only time in my life in like sixth and seventh grade. So I was wearing these like fun pumps and heels and just really like moving and expressing my body as a woman. And it was just, there was freedom to just sort of like explore and learn without consequence, right? Like in that sense, I didn't really feel that yet. And I just had this freedom in the sense of like food and body. But the plot twist is where this kind of all started, is really, how do you look in this dress? How are you being kind of compared against this one girl's party or this one girl's situation? And I really still was doing, I guess, some organized sports, but way less. So there wasn't a consistent way that I was moving and exerting my body, because responsibilities of like school and other obligations started to come into play. And just my body kind of was like the last on the resort. So it was like, okay, well, maybe I'll go run outside with my brother and play ball, or maybe I'll do this, or maybe I'll do that. And so I started sort of, I guess I would say, losing touch with my body a little bit because I didn't have this sense of like making it a priority. And then we're into middle school. So, you know, ninth and 10th grade, like I had boyfriends, I was in serious relationship. Shout out to all my high school exes. And we just kind of like, again, that sort of like awakening as a woman and that experience. And so I remember starting to like, oh, like he's going to see me like this. So I need to eat a certain way. I need to work out a certain way. My relationship really to food and body was open to what diet culture was in a really kind of deep way, not just 100 calorie packs. I didn't really get it until I was in that older time. I did Weight Watchers. I went to diet doctors. I tried every method under the sun to be skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. And just that became my relationship with my food and body. And really, like, I learned to work out to sweat and be skinnier. I went to tanning booths to be tanner. There was this, like, I guess I call it like the Abercrombie, like Hollister culture that really just enmeshed into the lifestyle of like what I wanted to be and how I wanted to live. And, you know, it wasn't just me, it was my friends, it was my group. I went to sleepaway camp. Like, you know, we wanted to go to camp, lose a couple pounds, 10 months for two. And like, you come back, bada bing, bada boom, and you're ready for school. Like, that's how I thought at camp. So that sort of really, I think, defined a lot of the like initial seeds of disordered relationship with food and body.
I just want to jump in and say, yeah, like, it, like from what you're speaking about, like, it just important to note, I think, of like how normalized all those things were. Like all the girls at camp thought this, like everyone just was like going to tanning beds and like trying to manipulate their body. And it was just like, oh, this is just like this, the water you're swimming in. Like there was no, like, you know, it's as far as I can hear from what you're sharing, there was no like red flags of like, oh my God, these girls are like starting down the road of disorder.
Yeah, no, it was totally normal. Like it was just like casual culture. There was nothing, nobody said, I mean, maybe a tanning bed, sure. Someone's like, okay, maybe you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But like counting points or eating smaller restricted sizes or doing an extra workout or whatever it was, it was all in relationship to manipulating my body to look and fit in a certain way. And it was like a mutually agreed upon social norm, which I didn't necessarily really acknowledge to agree to. So I had to kind of look at that later in life and be like, whoa, I really conformed to how culture is. But that's a whole nother sidebar for later, I guess, in life. But just going back to high school, I really buckled down on school. Like I want to go to college. I kind of just like hermited into myself and removed my body from the picture, focusing on school, kind of just was like, you know, that's it, right? I want to get to the college and then I'll be able to have a good time. And I gained weight and my parents got concerned for me. And we all mutually agreed, I felt that it was time for me to like buckle down, quote unquote, and like really look into ways I can manipulate my body to be smaller to prepare for my freshman year. Sorority and being in all of those things was like, you know, I wanted to do that. That was, again, kind of going back to that societal cultural norm that I felt I was entitled to of, okay, I'm just going to jump into this. It's my next step. So nothing ever made me question those motives of what I was doing, but I knew I was unhappy. Like there was a deep part of me that was never really satisfied. And I was distracting myself obviously with a million and one different things. So I guess if we like kind of buckle down to college, which is a freedom. I like, that was the first thing that like came to me. I journaled big freedom. Like I got to have dino nuggets in my fridge. And when I was drunk, I made dino nuggets with my friends and it was fun. I got to drink. I learned really about alcohol and I learned, you know, ways I could not eat and get more drunk or ways that I could, you know, be sober after and how it felt in my body. And so I think that was really the first time I learned to numb my body, to numb my body from experiencing pain, numb my body to experiencing whatever it was that I didn't want to feel through food and through alcohol. And then in college, I was in a sorority. So I'm close with a couple of people from my sorority, but I really reflect on the experience and it was great while I was there. I really enjoyed the connections I made, but the culture and aspects of how sororities are, at least where I went to school, it's just a constant competition of like, who is skinnier, who is sexier, who is doing more, who is, you know, there's never enough. And you're always kind of, I think, trying to conform to be the better version of whatever. So it felt very much like I couldn't be who I was. And I didn't even know who I was because I was so focused on that image of what I'm supposed to be. So that kind of took me into a tailspin in some ways. And I'm like, okay, I got to get out of this. I changed my major 5 times. I could not figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I took an intro to sociology class and I'm like, oh, I love people. Like, people are cool. Like, maybe I learned to study people. So I ended up getting my bachelor's in social work. I knew right away I needed to get my master's because it was hard to get a job without it, really. That was kind of like the initial reasoning. And I went right away to get my master's in social work at Columbia, but I knew I never wanted to be a therapist, which, sidebar Leah, that was a trauma that I told myself. I didn't realize until later in life that that was a big part of me owning my truth and my intuition later on, that I want to help people. And not being a therapist was a story that I listened to society to say, you're not going to make money. You're not going to be able to afford the lifestyle you want to live, you know, all these things. I'm like, okay, well, I'll figure it out another way to help people. Wow. That was kind of my part of my story of where I am.
And you think that, like, if it wasn't for society telling you like all these reasons why, like, you quote unquote, like, shouldn't be a therapist, do you think that you maybe would have enjoyed that?
Yeah, I think I would have. I think a part, it's still maybe a part of my story in my own future way of coaching, developing, mentoring people. A lot of what I've been doing in my life. And I don't know, like, there's, you know, it could be, life is long. Mm-hmm. I guess, but going back to the food and body part. So finally kind of getting into grad school, being so excited, moving to New York. I was in a small college town. I'm like, peace, ready to go to the big city. Freedom, even more so, I would say, from college. Living in New York, I was drinking, I was partying, I was going out, I was going to school, I was, you know, eating and ordering in. Oh my God, ordering in, when I first learned about ordering in. And I just lost control, I would say, of really listening to myself and what I needed. And really at that point tied my relationship to food and body with my feelings. And so I guess at that point in time, it was like, all right, here we are. We can order this whatever thing, like, shout out to egg drop soup and Chinese food, like, major go-to for me, feel good food. And so that's what I would do. If I was stressed out, I'd order food. I didn't really have any other coping skills. And it's ironic because I studied in some ways a lot of these things. And I never really applied them to myself. I thought, you know, I just didn't. I didn't think about it. I didn't really reflect at the time. And so I really turned to food as my crutch for all feelings and feels. And I went through some pretty bad breakups and they really put me in a hole. I went through, I guess, in my early days in New York, a lot of gaining and losing of weight. I would gain, I went to a diet doctor for a little bit, got on medication, lost, gained. It was just like a yo-yo. I lost and I gained, I lost and I gained. And it really got to the point that I was just so numb. And Leah, she remembers, she probably will shout this out, but like, all I kept repeating on my intake call is just, I am numb. Like, I have done a lot of growth work and spiritual work kind of in between, separate, on the side, in addition to Leah and her process. But there was still a part of me that was not having the mind-body connection to get me further spiritually. And so that's why I think this work was so powerful for me in this whole sort of process, when I was like, oh, okay, like, I'm actually going to do this, is because that was lacking for me. I was numb to my body. I didn't want to feel my body. I was ashamed of my body for a very long time. And like, if I go back to those periods in time, I would even say, like, that started in middle school. There was a shame, really, from a certain way of this whole comparison story I've shared, that pushed me further and further away from my body, and use food to really just make that relationship feel better through the feelings of things. So I guess, long story longer, that's kind of where I've been in my story.
Erica, thank you so much for taking us through those different chapters. And I'm curious, when along, so, you know, we're getting to this place of like the now, kind of like the most recent chapter. Yeah. I'm curious if you can remember what it was like, kind of like hearing about intuitive eating for the first time, whether that was through me or somewhere else. And sort of if you can go back in time and remember like your initial thoughts or feelings around like learning this like radically different approach to food and body.
I remember being like, what the fuck?
Love the honesty. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know I can curse on here, like, shout out to previous episodes. Like, But yeah, I remember being like, that doesn't seem like it could work. I think I even journaled, like, I was like, no, like, changes are hard. Like, this is unrealistic. You know, I remember thinking there's quick fixes. Like, why would I want to not have a quick fix? But that was just like what I was told by diet culture. So intuitive eating just didn't feel like it would be something that would be, for me initially, like initially, yes. But I really feel like it planted seeds and allowed me to sort of sit with this feeling of, should I do this? Should I not? And I contemplated, I'm being real, for a little bit. But I messaged you. I messaged you a lot. I'm like, wow, this really resonated. Or, oh, okay, like, I had something, you know, today that really kind of shook me that I'm like, what am I doing? I'm like, I think I need this. And I just started being honest with Leah in the DMs of like, this is happening for me and I don't know what to do, but I know this isn't working. Like, I really started to get that feeling of like, this isn't working. This is not working. And I needed help and asking for help.
Yeah. And just looking at your history, like, it's the proof is, I want to say the proof is in the pudding, but I'm like, I've never used that saying before. And like, I don't know.
I talked about pudding.
You talked about pudding. But you know, like, the proof is really in your history at like a certain point. If you look at it, like, you try things, like, they work and then they don't, they work and then they don't, they work and then they don't, which of course diet culture tries to get you to believe is your problem of you. Like, you are somehow uniquely broken. But looking back, hopefully at a certain point, people can say like, the system, like the exterior metrics, the diet pills, the diet, whatever, is what's not working. And so having someone tell you like, actually, there's no rules feels so radical, but also it's like, okay, well, if all of these exterior metrics and trying all of these different parameters and rules to control my body size and my food intake, like if that was never working, we can't keep going down that route. Like, that's like, you know, they say the definition of insanity, like trying the same thing over and over, knowing that it doesn't work. So what was that shift for you, and from going from a place of like, what the fuck, to, okay, I'm actually like open to hearing this.
I think there's a part about like having it be an investment in myself. Like the concept of I am making this financial investment in my own development was like, if I'm doing this, I have to put in the effort and the work and being ready. Like, I think for me, it was really just about, okay, I have the energy. Cause this is not like something that is, like I said, there's no quick fix. There's no like read a manual. This is like sitting with yourself, looking at the things that you do and say and feel and believe about you and what you've been told in society and culture and all the levels and the layers of it. And literally peeling back to yourself. And that takes a lot. Like, it's not, I'm not going to bullshit you and say, this is easy. This is something that you can just sign up for and finish the course and you're ready to go. If you're not committed, like, it's just not, you have to really know in yourself if you're open to being committed. And I think that small, I wouldn't say I was like, okay, I'm ready and open, but there was an opening enough that I could see that for myself. And I felt very safe with Leah. I felt very supported. I felt like I was really trusting her in me. And I'm someone that I feel like personally is a very strong person that a lot of people come to me for so many things. And I love that about me. I love that I can be there and to appreciate and value people. But for myself, it takes me, I think, a little bit longer and trying to, I guess, find the right fit that feels really good and authentic to me. So that's why I think Leah was the person that really guided me to that place. And I don't know, like, I don't know. I've tried other nutritionists but not in this sort of way and fashion at all. I never felt like, okay, like I can do this. I can have this experience for myself. Yeah.
You bring up such a good point. Like, feeling safe with the person is so, so important, especially when your trust has been tarnished in the past because you've trusted doctors and, you know, diet plans and all these different things. And so really putting your trust in someone who's saying this is going to be different. I think it matters so much that you feel a connection and you feel safe with them above all. And thank you for the kind words, Erica.
It's mutual. Like, it has to be a mutual safety container because I don't think it's just one or the other. So I think that's why also like you doing your connection and really seeing like you believe that you can help this person authentically and genuinely, or you say, you know, maybe I have a reference of whoever.
Exactly. That is so important to me. Something I've really learned in my business journey is like, we think that like we should take on everyone because like we want to help everyone, but actually it's like most helpful to help the people who you feel that you would connect well with and have good chemistry, because this is, like you're saying, very deep and intimate work. So I'm curious if you can remember a moment of sort of like, we call it in the intuitive eating world, like a diet rock bottom, like a moment of just being like, I cannot continue in this way.
I remember it was like a snowstorm in New York and I needed to go to like CVS or Walgreens to just like, I would sometimes keep food in my house, like sometimes not, like it would ebb and flow in New York, and it was winter. So it was probably leftover season if I'm being real. And I remember going and buying all of these just like junk food candy, like nothing that felt like it would actually give me sustenance, but more just feeding my negative emotional feeling and consuming more of that than really I felt comfortable in a binge, and just being like, this is painful. Like physically feeling pain in my body and understanding at that moment that this was something that it wasn't actually, I wasn't hungry. I was just feeding a feeling. I wasn't hungry. And I had that awareness of like, oh my gosh, I'm just like mindlessly like just eating and I'm not even hungry and it hurts and I'm doing this and I'm in physical pain. Yeah. So I had to get to the point of really physical pain to say, this is no longer a way that I live and cope with how I'm going to live my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is reminding me, I know we talked about in our early days working together, of like this concept of like in the beginning, like we talked about so much numbness and not being able to hear your body unless it's screaming at you. Like, hey, I'm so full from eating way past comfortable fullness, like do something. And with the work of intuitive eating, like it helps you tune into like the whispers before they become screams.
Yes. I felt like for a long time, and just the fight or flight responses were really like the ones that I could hear the most in life. And so doing this work, I've really just, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, but the moments of like presence, and I could just really like connect to my body in like an instant moment. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. It can be something mundane as brushing my teeth or washing my face. Like I really just have this deep connection with my body, and it's really beautiful to feel.
So beautiful. I can't wait to get into like the after chapter. Before diving in there, I know you mentioned some of your hesitations being that like, what the fuck? This is so different than anything I've ever been exposed to before. Is there any other hesitations you'd want to add that you can remember feeling before signing up to work together?
Yeah, definitely. There were a couple of other things I like jotted down when thinking about this, like shame came up for me, like shame that I needed this program, like shame. There was another thing like, ugh, I have to try something else. I have to do this other thing. Really knowing that there was a time commitment. Like I remember being like, I'm just going to try to cancel. Like, I'm just going to like, you know, there were moments like, eh, I didn't want to do this. So really just buckling down and having that discipline with myself. And just like worried, really, I think the big point was this was the first time where it didn't really feel like a quick fix mentality. And I just want to share that, like coming from someone that was so enmeshed in diet culture, that to me was like the secret sauce of diet culture. There's going to be a quick fix for this wedding. There's going to be a quick fix for this bar mitzvah. There's going to be a quick fix for whatever it was to get myself feeling comfortable. And the entire journey of getting there was never comfortable. And then also being there, you're still not comfortable. So it just was not true.
Yeah. Right. It depends on what your definition of a fix is. Like if it's a crash diet, makes you lose weight, but then you regain more than you lost. Like, is that it's a quick fix, quote unquote, depending if you're on your definition of fix, but also like causing you ultimately more pain and struggle in the long term.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing those. I think the hesitation specifically, I just was talking to another client about this, about feeling shame of even needing this program in the first place. Like, yeah, why can't I just stop when I'm full and like, quote unquote, eat like a normal person? And I was talking about this with a client the other day. She was like, I want to celebrate that, you know, I was able to stop eating when I was full at this brunch, but like, it feels so silly. Like that's what people can just do. And my heart in that moment just went out to her, because it's like, yes, of course it feels like that's what you should be able to do. But like you said, you got put into this culture before you like consented to it, right? Like it just was happening to you. And the same is true for her. And so we can't help those things, like whether or not it's like, yeah, I agree. It should be that like none of us have to be subject to these diet messages. But the reality is so many of us are. And for so many of us, like simply being able to honor a cue and stop when you're full to brunch is actually a huge fucking deal.
Everyone has their own shit. Like everyone's got their own shit. Some people need this aspect of healing their relationship with food and body. Other people have other concerns or challenges that they go through. So exactly. I have now learned to have less judgment on myself, but in very early days, it was very, very clear to me that I held a lot of shame.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get into the after. So tell us, take us through, what is your relationship with food and body like post embodied method, post kind of like coming through the major hump of becoming an intuitive eater?
Yeah. So I feel like I've graduated for a while, like a year now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like which that. Is kind of fun. Cause it's like a, where is she now episode.
It is. Where is she now? I first really, before I even get into where am I have to shout out the alumni community. So all the girls and the people that I connected with, like in that group, I'm so, so grateful for the space and the energy and the collective safety of just speaking the same, hearing the same, honoring the same, and just really being able to be myself fully and just share and be seen. Like major, I think, aspects to me of is community, and feeling that sense of community has really helped me in a lot of ways. Building those relationships now for me outside of the community, it's been really beautiful. So I guess like if I put it in simply, and then I can like expand on some details, I am still in touch. I am still learning. I am still accepting and loving and being neutral towards my body and the food that I eat. I no longer hold certain foods of higher or lower moral value. I am listening to my body. I am listening to my mind. There are some aspects that I have to put on my rational mind and say like, okay, hi, example, literally before this call, I had a yogurt today and I haven't been wanting yogurt, but I knew this call we'd be sitting and I love hanging with Leah and catching up, that I didn't know how long it would take for us to be on this call. I didn't know. And I normally have like, you know, a leisurely casual breakfast now that I'm fun employed, but I knew I needed to eat something before being on this call. So I had full sustenance so that I could be ready and in here and fully present. And I'm so glad I did, because I still feel really good having that moment. So I really take my time to have intention around what my day is going to look like and how do I nourish myself throughout that day fully, without there being an emotion always tied to every single aspect to what I do. But honoring if and when I'm choosing that, it's a choice and I'm choosing it, not out of unconscious choosing. So having the gray, kind of living in the gray, I guess, with myself in some ways, high level, but I definitely have more detail.
Oh my gosh. There's so much to get into. I mean, it's a great place to start of just like naming, like you're able to think about your food choices in the context of like, okay, what do I have going on today? It's this combination of honoring your intuition, but also like you said, logical brain, like sitting down on a few hour call. Okay. Like might not be hungry right now, but want to put in some fuel because I don't want to end up in a situation where I'm ravenous and can't focus. So I think those are like really, really helpful details to help someone understand like what your relationship with food could look like on the other side of this. Tell us about the elements of like, clearly before this was taking up a lot of space in your brain. Like you gave the example of CVS and the snowstorm and like the shame after the binges. Tell us some of those pieces, kind of like the day-to-day, what it's like living in your head now versus living in your head pre.
Yeah. So now that I have the, you know, hindsight of seeing where my mind was prior, I've had to do a lot of forgiveness of myself for this taking up so much mental capacity in my brain. There were a lot of stories I told myself about a lot of things. And I mean, they're kind of laughable now, like when I look back, but I mean, if I knew I was going out to brunch somewhere and then dinner, I would obsess looking at the menu. I would know exactly what I wanted to order. I would know the backup order in case I wasn't sure that that was what I wanted to order. And then when I still got to the restaurant, I would do the exact same mindset panic is kind of how I felt of what am I going to order? Who's ordering this? Are they going to split that with me? I mean, it was just all encompassing. I wasn't able to be present in conversation with my friends or with my family because I was just so, there was this worry, this kind of fight or flight kind of thoughts around food and not really able to be mindful and present because there was always this sort of like worry of what I was getting or was it enough or was it not enough? And, you know, was I going to have leftovers? Was I not? There were so many constant questions that I was asking myself around food. And it just got to the point that it was so mentally taxing that I couldn't be present with the people that I wanted to be around and enjoy eating with. And now I'm present. I'm able to be with the people I love. I try things. I have expanded my palate. I've become more open to just saying like, okay, I'm going to try that. And maybe I like it or maybe I don't. So I'm much more curious, I would say, with what I'm eating and exploring and being able to be with the people rather than worrying about what this is or what this isn't. And I've become more creative. I've become more inspired. I am so much more in touch with just what's happening around me and nature. Since I moved to Florida, I just have nature everywhere. And that's been really helpful with my practice of being present and living mindfully and not just living about food, but living life really fully and having the brain capacity to now do that.
Absolutely. And I know this is sort of a loaded question, but I like to pose this question of like, what changed? Like, what do you think is the thing that allows you to just like go to a brunch now, order whatever, and not like do the whole before obsessing? And once you're there, like running the whole inner monologue, what feels like kind of like the biggest thing that allowed that shift?
I trust myself now. I trust myself. I trust hearing myself now. There's no comparison. There was just sort of the shift of, oh, this is about me. This is about what I need. This is about what feels right for me in this moment. And maybe it would feel different in that next moment, but really just allowing myself to acknowledge moment to moment, what do I need to be in my highest good, both, I guess, all mind, body, and spirit, and just kind of constantly checking in with myself about where I am in that and what I need to be feeling in the best version of myself.
Yeah. As you're sharing that, Erica, I just like can see this really like major difference between like the comparison is like going out. What is she having? What are they having? What will they think? You know, what's good, what's bad versus going in. What do I need? What would feel good for me, for my soul, for my spirit, for my body right now? And that is the shift of intuitive eating. Like intuitive eating is an inside job. It doesn't matter what's going on outside of you. It's your body, how you feel. That is always a litmus test. And it's just so cool to hear you kind of like put that into such like a clear before and after.
But also like being real, like that's not every single moment. Like I just also have to put that caveat there that I'm not this like magically like 100% healed human. I'm still really learning and evolving. And there are days that are harder for me and days that are easier for me. And I just think it's really, really, I want to make sure that's a clear expectation of that. There's no magical, it's all fixed. Yeah. And I think sometimes that still goes back to diet culture to me. Like I have to really remind myself that life is a journey and this process is a journey. And that, you know, like I said, there will be days that I feel really great. And then there are days that maybe I won't, and that it's okay to be with those feelings, regardless of what they were. Like I go back to that feeling of being so numb and now the joy of being able to feel both the really highs and the really lows of lows.
Yeah.
They're both there.
Thank you for adding that. That is so important. Diet culture is all about perfection and like everything's all healed, and intuitive eating is about like, for the most part, I feel better day to day, but yeah, sometimes like I run into an obstacle and it's about how you handle it when you do, instead of the guilt and shame and berating. It's like, oh, interesting. I don't feel so good in my body right now. Like, curious, like what led me here? Like, what can we learn from this?
Like before this call, for example, also today, I was like, I need to move. I had jitters. I was like, I need to just move my body. And I did a quick 30-minute like yoga stretch session, and I could just feel myself drop into my body and just feel so much more present to be here and be with you because I just allowed myself to move and I listened to that need and I honored it. And when you move into a pattern of just honoring your needs more fully and more consistently, you just, I think at least for me, how I describe it is I just feel overall just more at peace with myself. Mm-hmm. There's not as much of a fight with myself. When I'm more consistent in those thought patterns and how that, you know, again, like honoring those needs for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's such a beautiful way to put it. Just the peace and the trust. Tell us kind of the ripple effect. So we always talk about how it starts with your relationship with food and body, but having this connection with your intuition inevitably overflows into other parts of your life. So what was kind of, I guess, maybe some of the most surprising ripple effects or just the ripple effects in general for you of doing this work?
Yeah. I mean, I think my life flipped upside down.
Your ripple effects are pretty huge. I actually, as I'm asking that question, I'm like, oh shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things changed in my life and I probably won't get into like every single detail, but the long story of it is I just completely changed every single thing about how I was living my life, what was really reflecting on my values. I really feel like I grew up. Is a kind of really nice way to sort of summarize this is I value myself. I value the relationships I keep in my life. I let go of people that I don't feel serve me in my life. I moved. I've changed, as I told you all, I'm fun employed now. So really a lot of the things that were not really honoring my intuition, I am no longer holding on to and really just surrendering to my highest good of what is for me. And I guess really what that is just like being open to that experience. I was very closed to those experiences, but now I just feel so much more connected, like to myself. And it's allowing me to open up to people that I really feel that I love and honor and trust and support more freely and fully. Yeah. I'm so much more mindful. I'm so much more present. I really enjoy being in nature and spending time with my little dog and, I just really can be where I am. And I think that's something that really changed for me is like, I guess one of the most surprising things is I can really just be here and not somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh, and that's such a gift because you get to like reap more juice out of life. And you hit on, I mean, the beautiful ripple effects of like presence. Like it sounds like, as we spoke about, like once that numbness was lifted on food and body, it was also lifted on like, what do I want? Like, who am I? All of these bigger things. What would you say was the most surprising part of doing this intuitive eating work?
I really just think that part, like I said before about the feeling, like all of my feelings and just removing that veil of numbness. And yeah, I think there still are moments where feeling hard feelings is hard for me, but I'm still now able to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm actually physically able to feel the sensations of suffering and pain and sadness and heartbreak in my body. And before I just felt numb to really life. And now I really feel like I've shifted from the place of surviving to thriving, and just how I embody living life. Like I really feel like I've had several losses this past year, and it's really also helped me to reflect in my intuitive living journey by honoring their presence and the people that have passed, and that feeling of what they gave to me and living that in my life by being intuitively listening to my highest good, what is there for me, with the trust that our relationship brought those things to me and I could be present and feel those things to now as a service to them and an honor to them, live that in my life now, even though they're not here.
Yeah. I'm hearing this piece about like more reflection, like it's kind of going hand in hand with like being more present in your daily life of also like having more reflection on like what things mean for you and in a way that like maybe the bandwidth wasn't there because of the food and body thoughts prior.
Absolutely. I really feel like I said before, I grew up, I really got to be the adult version of me with the wonderment of my childlike spirit by listening to what my quote unquote inner child needs, to support where I am currently right now today. And through that is reflection, through self-awareness, through being able to, have the mental capacity to allow those things to come through for me rather than this noise of just food and body, that was taking up so much of that mental capacity.
Totally. And what would you share with someone who is on the fence about doing intuitive eating?
Okay, so I'm really excited about this question because I picked cards for this question. Okay.
Can you explain to them what that means? Oh, like if they're listening and they don't know what picking cards is, can you tell them your background with this?
Okay, so before I even get to the cards, I took a couple notes about what this question means to me. So I like to think of the and statement that Leah talks about. So when you're on the fence of something, acknowledge that something can be scary and it can be normal to have reservations and it still can still be okay to go through with that experience. I think having an honest look in the mirror for yourself is really important. Like looking yourself in the eye, if you can really look in your own mirror and talk to yourself, like have a conversation with yourself. If you're on the fence, learn why you're on the fence and be able to bring that to the light, bring that to the surface. So those were just my own initial kind of like thoughts. Yeah. But I love, messages and signs and just little reminders that help me move forward in connecting to my highest good, my mind, my body, my spirit. And so what that means for me is some of the ways I hear those messages or get those sort of little reminders is through, just certain ways. And, I guess they're spiritual cards, if you want to call them. And so I pull a certain card and I just feel within the deck or feel what I feel is going to give me sort of an answer to what I'm questioning or help me move towards understanding something that will help me find the words to articulate. Sometimes it's hard for me to find the words. So this helps me pull that together and formulate my own sort of thought.
Do the card decks have names? Like, why am I wanting to call it like an oracle deck? Is that?
Yeah, there's some. There's all different kinds. There's oracle. The deck that I've used today is a chakra deck. So I really like this, and especially thinking about mind, body, spirit connection. So each of these cards represent a different chakra in your body. So when this question was, what's something you would tell someone who's on the fence about going all in? I picked a solar plexus card and I also picked an intuition card. So solar plexus is basically like your intellect, your planning process, and your brow chakra obviously is your intuition, your seeing. So in the prayer card, which is in your solar plexus, your really intellectual planning process, it says, and I quote, "Cutting through and facing the truth, surrender to a higher calling. There is a collaboration here and a willingness to change one's mind. Try letting go of control." So I thought that was really interesting being on the fence.
Yeah, and your cards always give me chills. I'm like, oh,
it's just the messages we need to hear. And then this one, which was despondence, I never say this word, is purple, which was the chakra of intuition and seeing. And this one, you're gonna mic drop this one, Leah. "You have all the answers you need, seeing the unseen. You have all the answers you need from within. This card may indicate an emotional tie that no longer serves you. Remember, how you relate to the issue is the issue. Obstacles are removed when you change your relationship to them."
Wow.
So I just thought that was really interesting about being on the fence. And so this, for anyone really listening here that is on the fence, like I hope this propels you in some way that you can feel just thank open you. To going all in.
Yeah. Erica, thank you for picking those cards. That's such a special part of our in our work together. Sometimes Erica would pick a card at the end of our session. So it became a really like special ritual for us. And so I love that you were able to integrate that into this podcast episode. I have a few little kind of rapid fiery questions for you.
Tell me,
what is your biggest diet culture pet peeve?
Oh, okay. This question. So I feel like it's like people pushing their magic tricks on you is kind of what it feels like. I feel like community of intuitive eating is too small, even though it's not really like a diet culture pet peeve. It's still a pet peeve. Like we need more people in this world, in this space. I think that weight being an indicator of health really frustrates me, especially I like to think of like the olden times when like, you know, the noble people were, you know, larger size and then some of the other. So it just kind of blows my mind. Like, where was that shift? Mm-hmm. Skinnier, meaning healthier, labeling things as good versus bad. rules on when you can eat. So like the people that are like, oh, I can't eat until this time, and I can only eat from this time to this time, trying to kind of meet with them. And it just makes things more complicated. I think also the last couple of things is this concept that we have to fix our body, that our body is constantly needing to be fixed. Nothing is wrong with your body to be fixed and manipulated. This selling misinformation to insecure people of diet culture. Yes. So there's so much misinformation and it's being sold to so many people, and it's really heartbreaking.
Oh my gosh. I think that's mine right there. Like preying on vulnerable people who just want so badly to have like love and acceptance in society and will buy whatever thing, you know, in an Instagram doom scroll that they're advertised, you know, having targeted ads sent to them.
It's laughable. It's so awful. It should be illegal. And the last thing is certain foods being owned by diet culture. Mm. So like smoothies, salads, a rice cake. I love me a good smoothie, a good salad, and a good rice cake with some fun things on it. So any food is for anybody.
Yes. Intention is everything. If your intention is to shrink yourself, it's diet culture. If your intention is because you like the crunch or you like the taste or whatever, cool. Could be totally part of intuitive eating. And then my last question for you that I've been asking everyone on the pod, what does intuition mean to you and how do you experience it?
So this question, it's funny. I love this question. And I also feel like this is such a profound question because it's so unique to each individual person. But at the same time, I feel like there's a universal sort of message that is across for everyone. So for me, I would say intuition is really removing all the outside noise, the coulds, the woulds, the shoulds. When I lost my job, everyone was telling me everything that I should be doing. And I'm like, whoa, this is really when my intuition is speaking so loud. So I was like, oh, nice to hear you. Thanks. Tapping into really what is my highest good, but not just for me, but for the collective world, like the collective experience of who I'm with. What is the highest good for like all of the universe? I really think about not just myself, but sort of the higher, bigger picture of that. Intuition to me is being at peace, really just being present to where I am in this moment, physically, mentally, and spiritually, really just being the witness to my experience without any sort of judgment, feeling around shame, guilt, etc. I guess really embracing the fact that I have the power to really create the life that I want to live if I can choose to listen to this voice. But also honoring that there are times and there are places and situations that I don't always listen to that voice, and having forgiveness for myself to going back to that place and knowing that it's there for me every single time and I can choose.
Yeah. So beautiful, Erica. And I'm curious if you can put words to it. I know it's hard. How do you experience it? Like, how does your intuition manifest in your body? How does it communicate with you?
Yeah. So, it's so funny. It's like, it is hard to kind of talk about. There's a part of me, there's like two parts that I feel it. I think really there's a sense of when I'm really quiet within my body, I can feel my heartbeat kind of radiating throughout my whole body in a sense of stillness within me. And then when I'm really relaxed, there's just sort of like whispers of things that I can really hear, breathing, like deep breaths. I can just feel my whole body kind of rise and fall. And that to me kind of drops me into that experience. And the biggest thing I'd say is also in my gut, there's a lot of feelings in my gut. So really discerning what's that feeling and what's the truth from that feeling in my gut, because it can mean a lot of different things. And then just really the intention in my body of what I'm feeling. Because I think that's really important to know I'm feeling something and honoring that with what's the next intention from what I'm feeling.
Yeah. Wow. It's hard to put into words, but you did a really good job of like putting words to a kind of like very much abstract concept and experience to be talking about. Is there anything we missed, Erica? Is there anything else about your story that we missed, or anything else on your heart that you're wanting to share with the people today?
Thank you for listening. If you made it through all the way to hear about my story, I guess a couple of things, like really just everyone that I've you know, has led me up to this time and moment in my life. I really do have gratitude and a lot of thankfulness to have gotten here. I really am honored to be here and share my story and my truth. And if you're ever on the fence, I think Leah is the really right person. I'm not a salesperson by any means, but Leah is the right person just to talk to, no pressure. And that I really feel and know that this work is going to help so many people. So I'm just excited and genuinely rooting you on wherever you are in your journey.
Yeah. Thank you for those beautiful words, Erica. It's been such a pleasure to get to catch up and hear where you are now. And I really can't thank you enough for your willingness to share your story, because I know it will inspire many people. And it's so powerful for others to hear how this can look. So thank you for being open and to be vulnerable and sharing your journey with the people.
Absolutely. It was an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Another big thank you to Erica for being so open to coming on the podcast and sharing her story with all of you. So if Erica's story resonated with you and you're sitting here thinking like, wow, I have shared a lot of those similar struggles with my relationship with food and body, and I want to experience, you know, the peace that comes with healing a relationship with food. If you have been thinking about reaching out for support on your intuitive eating journey, then it would be my absolute honor to invite you to apply to my one-to-one coaching program, The Embodied Method. We now have some spots opening, which is so exciting. We don't always have spots open, so I would be absolutely honored to invite you to apply via the link in the show notes. So it's going to say link to apply to coaching here. And how it works is you'll apply and I'll take a look at your application, send you an email, we'll book a discovery call. And on that call, I'll ask you some more questions about you and your story to make sure you're a great fit for the program. And if it feels like my program would be able to offer you the support that you need, then we'll go from there. And if not, I can hopefully point you in the direction of the support that you're seeking. So I'm so excited to hear from you, read your application, and maybe meet you on a discovery call. If you have any questions, you're welcome to email me. My email, all my contact information is in the show notes. So that is all for today, and I'll see you next week. If you enjoyed this episode, if it inspired you, if you learned something, it would mean so much to me if you rated it and reviewed it. And if you feel called to, share it with someone who it might resonate with. You can find me on Instagram at leahkern.rd. You can also join my weekly newsletter by visiting leahkernrd.com. And I'll see you next week.